Welcome to Beyond the Scars. I'm your host, Olivia.
And I'm Gianni Storm. This is a new podcast where we share real people and their stories of perseverance.
Remember, scars show toughness, that you've been through it and you're still standing.
So the desires and dreams came from me wanting to be loved. I knew I was always going to be something because, or you know what I say, be somebody, because that's just who I am. I was not ever going to let that stop me. But my desire was to actually feel love. Love and loved, because I didn't, you know, I just didn't from anybody. Correction, my brother and my sister, I knew she cared about me. But I didn't feel the love from a parent, from like a romantic partner. You know, in high school, you should be having cute little boyfriends and matching t-shirts. Like, I wanted that, didn't get that. I was just like, dang, this sucks. Like, my life sucks. So that was the desire more than anything. It was like, does anybody see me? Does anybody know that I'm really a good person on the inside? You know, like, I can act up, but there's a reason why I'm acting up. But like, will anybody ever love me? So those were my desires more than anything. I was always in tune with my feelings. I think I was probably in tune with my feelings when I was in my mom's stomach. Like, I always felt something, always.
Yeah.
I would always feel people and things. And just like, people say I'm clairvoyant. I would agree. But I always felt something. Did I write in the journal? No, I didn't do that. I felt like, because I was not... Not to say writing in the journal is girly. No, let me just put that out there. But at the time, I was like, that's too girly. I am not going to write in the journal. For what? But I did have moments of, dang, sadness. I don't think I ever asked the question, why me? Like, why me? Did this happen? It was more like, why did it have to happen? And I was just like, this didn't, like, what is the reason? Like, this did not have to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a whole wife in there. Like, why would you want to mess with a child? I don't understand. And then my daddy was very, he dealt with infidelity. So my dad has a whole family somewhere else.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, they came to my sister's wedding and everything. I know, side note, but,
wow.
So it's like he had this woman throughout their whole marriage. So my sister was like, oh yeah, I remember her. I remember when she came to the house and she told my daddy that she was pregnant and mama fell out on the floor. I was like, what? Like, it's, my family is crazy. Now, if I were to be honest, the only time I felt like any type of sadness to that degree of why, I think I was 6 years old. Again, remember music. Between 6 or 7, music was always in our home. I'm truly a music connoisseur. But anyway, so I remember having the album because we had albums. And I remember playing the album, Donny Hathaway. And this is in my book too. But I remember playing that song over and over and over and over, knowing but not understanding, but knowing it was saving my life. And the song was Someday We'll All Be Free. So when I hear this today as a grown person, it's bittersweet because I go back to that child feeling like all hope was lost. Mm-hmm. And then looking at me now, like those lyrics, man, I know saved my life. I know they saved my life, because had I continued that place of moment of sadness or darkness or whatever that was, I probably would have killed myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I probably would have. But I felt that song was like, no, like your life is so precious. Like, you are giving, like when you grow up, you have an assignment on your life. Like, you don't know now. Like, you don't know now. And it doesn't make sense now. Mm-hmm. Gosh, that's just really hit me. It doesn't make sense now. But no, Don't give up. Don't give up. Mm-hmm. And that's what I felt in my spirit. I was like, okay, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. And I don't know if you ladies are familiar with this song. But after that, I was just like, nah, I'm supposed to be here. I always knew I was going to help. I've always been a helper. So I used to tell my mom, I said, I'm going to be a doctor. And so she was like, yep, you will be. Like, I'm pretty sure you will be. So going off to school, I thought I was going to be a medical doctor. And then as I got older, I was like, nah, I'm going to be a forensic psychologist. That's what I'm going to do. But then as it went on, I was just like, all of that would be great. And I know I could help people. But I'm going to become the person that I needed when I was a child. I'm going to become a counselor. And that's where that went. I didn't even know where I was going to go to. So that's the thing. Even though I was a great student, my parents did not go to college. My mom has a high school diploma. I think my dad went to college maybe like a very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. So they pushed education for us, and I knew I was smart, but I didn't know where I was going to go to school. So my mom, working at the VA, there was a lady that was a social worker. And so my mom was like, yeah, my daughter is so smart. So the lady was like, where's she going to school? She was like, I don't know. Because we didn't know. Anyway, long story short, because my grades were so good, I got an academic scholarship and I went to school in Salisbury, North Carolina. And I don't know if you ever heard of Livingstone College. I was ready to leave because I felt like I was being held captive, and not so much in my body, but more so in my mind. I was just like, I can't thrive here like I know I need to. And if I stay here, then I feel like I would just become a person that was negative, or become a, I just don't think I would have been who I am today had I stayed here in Texas and gone to school there, because I still would have been probably at home. And so I just knew I needed to get away. So yes, I was definitely ready to leave. Because in my brain, I was like, I can leave. I don't have to see these people. I can meet new friends. And that's exactly what I did.
Oh.
Now, because I'm very transparent, I got to school. And the first 2 weeks of college, I cried. And I don't know why I cried. I was just like, am I afraid for my mom? Am I this? Am I that? And I was just like, am I crying because I'm free? Like, I don't know. To this day, I don't know why I cried. So I was just like, what's your name? And what's your name? And what's your name? Like, I made so many friends. And I was just like, college was the best time ever in my life. Like, I still have friends. Like, my best friends are my line sisters, two of them. And we still talk. Like, we still talk. And yeah, I'm so glad I went to that place, because God knew. He knew.
And was your relationship with your parents transforming, or it was the same old?
No, it was transforming. It was like, I called my mom every single day. Every single day. They got me like this 800, whatever, where I could just call, and it's like, I don't know. But I called every day. Sometimes my dad would answer and I would just talk to him. It wasn't like I talked to my mom, but it would be like, hey, daddy, what are you doing? Oh, you cooking? Oh, send me some cake. You know, it would be something like that. So it was pleasant, very cordial, but it was very surface conversation. But I did feel a little bit more comfortable talking to him. And then by then, my mom and I were really like, I would tell her what's going on. I was like, man, so I'm drinking. I know I shouldn't be drinking. And what do you think I should do? Like, it was
very close. It's close. Getting close, actually.
After college.
After college, you got started into your career?
No. I went into the prison system, because I don't know why I did that. I felt like, I thought I was going to be like a counselor to the people in prison. I don't know. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. But I felt so comfortable there. I worked at state jails and I worked at the federal prison. And I was good. Like, I was a very good officer.
Like a CO?
Yeah, I was. I was very good. So good. So, like, the lieutenants was like, what are you thinking about a career? And I was like, nah, I'm just doing this. Like, no, don't even go there. But, like, I was really good with that. And I was good with the inmates and everything. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I did so well in that type of environment, but I did. I did that about how many years? Like 2 or 3. Yeah. And then I went back to school and got my master's. So now my mom and I are extremely close. Even more so. Like, we talk about everything. Like, we would talk like 2 or 3, 4 times a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You're like, Mom, guess what? And she's like, what happened? Like, girlfriends, what happened?
Like, friends.
Yeah. Oh, so this. And she's like, oh, that's funny. Like, it would be so good.
Is she still married to your dad at this
point? Yeah. She's still married to him. Everybody's gone from the house. They're at home together. I'm still thinking physical things are going on because I was right. But he had, like, truly slacked off, but he was still very mean and controlling. But the conversation, I mean, the relationship with my dad and I was still very surface, but I was still able to talk to him, but that didn't change. That did not change at all. Yeah. So that's how that was. So going out of college, I mean, graduating from college, I went into the prison system. And then after that, went back to school and then I got my master's and I was like, all right, so now you got to get serious because you're going to be a counselor. So all of that was like very important to me because I had to take care of my mental health. And I was just like, you need to see somebody. So then I started thinking about that and how could I be good for other people if I wasn't good. In the beginning, the thought of healing and getting myself together was very slow and organic. I wanted to prepare, like, what do you think you really need to do? How should it be? What, you know, like, who should you talk to? What's part of your healing journey? It was that. But then once I decided, it was like, let's just do it. We're not beating around the bush. We're just going to do it. I started being open with that. I told friends first. I started talking to my friends and they were like, now I kind of understand. Like, when we went to college and this and that. And I was like, yeah, makes sense, doesn't it? So I started going to a counselor. That was good because I was finally able to express myself. Like, that's what it felt like. And I think I know the journey really did not become a true journey until 2002. But 2002, it became a true journey. And I think this is very important. I don't know how you would edit this, but this is very important to healing. So I'm still promiscuous, doing whatever I want to do, sleeping with everybody, just hanging out in clubs and doing all the things. And then one day, because it was May 22nd, 2002, that's in the book as well, I had this feeling like, I kind of want to change my life. Like, I kind of want to change. Don't know how I want to change because everybody had been talking to me, like my grandma, my mom, my sisters, like, hey, get your life together. Like, it's just not a good life. And I'm like, you're right, but this is what it is. And so I remember being in my apartment on the third floor. I was sitting on my purple Chase lounge chair. I love that chair. and I was sitting on it and it was sunny outside. And I looked out the window and I was just like, something just doesn't feel right. And I remember feeling like I had left my body. And I was like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, you know, like when you watch a projector and like a sheet comes down. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. So it literally, I'm seeing a projector come down in front of my face and I'm thinking I'm tripping. I'm like, but no, you haven't taken anything. So no, like, just go with it. So this projector screen comes down in front of my face and I'm looking at it. And I'm like, what is this? And I started hearing screams, yells, cries, outbursts,
what?
All of that. I hear this first. And then I see, and it's still, when I tell people this, it still doesn't describe what I saw or what I felt. Then I see like a pit and a lot of people and clawing on each other and screaming and fighting. And I was like, is this hell? And as soon as I said that to myself, because I don't know what kind of relationship you guys have with God, but God has to show me stuff. He has to, like, I'm stubborn. He has to show me stuff. And so he knew he had to show me hell for me to get it right. And when I said, is this hell? I heard him say, I'm done with you. And I felt his hands do like this, like if I was going to drop in the pit of hell. And I was just like, oh my God. And I remember saying, don't leave me. Don't leave me. God, please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to change my life. And I kept screaming that and crying. And it was just like, no, he had to show me, just kept showing me. And then all just as fast as it appeared, it went away. Like the screen went away, the voices, the vision, all that. And I remember getting up and I went and I'm just pacing around my apartment, praying and pacing and praying and pacing. And I went to the calendar and I saw it was May 22nd, 2002. And that's when I changed my life. And I was like, okay, there it is. And that's when it officially started. Mm-hmm. What that looks like is intentional action of becoming healthy. And so healthy for me was getting my mind together, my mental state. I cut off a lot of relationships. I severed a bunch of ties. I had to. And I didn't feel bad about it. I just knew. I knew I was going to be okay. Like, I knew it was going up from there. Like, I knew that. No matter what I was going to face, like, I knew I was going to be okay. So that's what it looked like. I was just like, nope, can't talk to you anymore. Can't do this anymore. Not doing that no more. Like, and I did that. So I was able to do that with ease. I really was. So then I would pray more, meditate more, just being in the space of healing, wanting to receive. I then started liking myself. I started loving myself. I started to understand that what I was doing before wasn't love, even though I thought using my body would be love, but I knew I deserved better. And I also believed that. So then it was just like, yeah, so the people that come into my life now are going to be good for me. So that's what that looked like after that. Yeah. So I was in a place like my friends, I was telling about my line sisters, we would travel all the time. Because everybody was single. So we would go, like, literally, we were going everywhere, like, every 6 months. Like, our passports has a bunch of stamps on it. We were like, boom, 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 boom. Like, let's go. And because our careers were good. Like, my friend was a vice president of the bank. I was a director of the hospital. Like, my friend was a director. Like, yeah, we were good. I was just like, nah, I'm good. I don't think I want to get married. I don't think I want to do none of that. I'm good. You know, it's fine. And so, but I do remember saying, but if one day, Lord, you want to bless me with somebody, let me just write it down what it will look like. And so I wrote a letter to God. I said, this is what I want him to look like. And this is what he, this, and this is that. And like every single thing I have in there I'll come back to that. So I wrote the letter, put it in the Bible. A year, I think, passed by. I think it was like a year or something. I get on the internet. I was like, this stupid dating app stuff, let me try it. Like, whatever. So we're on a dating app. And this guy pops up. And I was like, okay. Well, he's cute enough. Let me talk to him. So we're conversing. And I was just like, conversation is different, but he's gonna play games like everybody else. Mm-hmm. So we actually conversed through the app for like 2 weeks. And so he was just like, would you ever be open or okay with me taking you on a date? And I was like, that's different too. Like the way he approached that, I was like, yeah, okay, sure. So we went on a date, and our first date was Mexican food. Love Mexican food. And when I walked up, I was just like, is this the guy? Because he had 24 yellow roses on the first date. No. And I'm so glad I had sunglasses on, because I was just like doing like that. And I was on the phone with my sister. So he didn't know if I was doing that to him or her. I was like, girl, he has roses. Well, oh my God. Okay, I'll call you later. Okay, bye-bye. You know, and so we have the first date. Everything is good. I'm nervous. He's nervous. We're talking. We're sharing food, all of that. And he looks at me and he says, this is funny. This is in a book too. He says, can we be exclusive? I was like, what? No, oh. I don't know you. Sorry, this is just the first date. It's just the first date. You're crazy. No. But as I'm saying that to him, I'm laughing, but I'm laughing out of nervousness because I want to say yes.
Yeah.
Because it feels different. I was just like, mm-hmm. So yeah, like it's funny. So we have that date and whatever. And I was because I was getting ready to go to Puerto Rico. Yeah, I was about to go. So I said, let's just go to Target. It was like right over there. I was like, let's go to Target and let's get some stuff. We walk across the parking lot and he grabs my hand and I'm holding his hand like, this is my man. And I was like, this is the first date. Why does it feel so different?
Wow.
It's crazy. And then we go back to the car and everything. I remember him calling his mom, and he told his mom on our first date, he said, I think I met the woman that I'm about to marry. And I was like, what? I don't know you, sir. Like, oh. But it worked out. And so then I'll go back to the letter I put in my Bible. I go and I put it, I opened the letter and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I told him, I said, I'm not going to give you this letter until we get married. So we get married, I give him the letter. But you have to understand everything I put in there. Like I put some things like superficial, like I want him to be this tall, I want him to be this age, on like all of that.
Yeah.
Everything was to the T. I'm not lying. I was like, he needs to have some good credit. If he doesn't have good credit, he needs to want to get it fixed. It needs to be this. And he's like all of that.
Wow.
Almost you manifested him.
Yeah, I did.
God manifested him for you.
So that's the thing. So then check this out. And this is what really blew his mind. And then I said, and Lord, I want him to speak another language. I said, preferably Spanish. I was just like, this is funny. He thought I was lying. So when we got married, I gave him the letter. And he was just like, you weren't lying. I said, I wasn't. So that's what it was. So I just like people to know that, like, you can find love on the internet, and you can find love after trauma too. So, because people don't believe that, but you can. But you can.
Had you shared your trauma with him at some point before getting married, and was that difficult for you?
A little bit. A little bit, because it was hard for me to receive his love. And he was like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was like, oh, "Okay, let me tell you." Mm-hmm. And then I told him, he was like, oh, that makes sense. But yeah, I told him about it and it made sense. And then the thing that I loved more about him even more after I said that, he didn't judge me. He was just like, all right, some stuff I'm not going to understand. And when you push me away, just keep talking to me because yeah, you know me, I'm going to think it's me, but I know it's not, you know, so it's like that. It was more than luck. Like,
You, sir,
are the truth. Like, he really is. He really is. And not because he's my husband, but, like, he really is the truth. It had to be him. It had to be. And I'm glad I wrote down exactly what I wanted in a husband. It had to be him. It couldn't be anybody. I could 100% say if it was anybody else, I don't think my healing journey would be this healthy. I don't. So the part that he plays on this journey, it just had to be because he's so supportive. He's so understanding. And then even when he doesn't understand, he wants to understand.
Yes.
So that's the difference. You know, some people get frustrated, be like, well, whatever, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he's so consistent with his love. That's how I know it's genuine. Like, it doesn't change. It doesn't change because I have an adult tantrum, because I still get those sometimes. Like, it doesn't change because I have an adult tantrum. It doesn't change because whatever. He is so consistent with his love.
What does motherhood look like for Lynn?
Oh, it's crazy. Like, again, I never thought I was going to have children. So I have a bonus baby. Our 18-year-old is a bonus baby. So when I became a wife, I became a mother instantly. In the beginning, I think he was more like, it's just been dad and me. Who are you? But he soon warmed up because I knew he needed a mom. And I saw it. So now, like, it depends on the day. Like, I can be the best mom to where I'm so playful and I'm being silly. And they're like, what? Mommy, you like to do? And then it could be like, oh, mommy's serious. So leave her alone because you know. So it's that. Like, I feel like I try to be a little bit of everything at different times. So me being a mom is the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it's a love that I never thought I would ever experience. Aww. Now, I felt like I was going to have a romantic love, but being a mom is totally different. It's like your heart to your children, like your heart is different.
Wow.
That's a love that you would never experience, I don't think, until you become a mom.
Wow.
And people told me, they told me that. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. But no, I see what they mean now. Like, you love your children like crazy. Mm-hmm. Like crazy. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that I'm a mom. I mean, I feel like it was a journey for sure. But yeah, that's just what I wanted to do. I decided that I didn't want to have a heart of steel. Like, I didn't want to not be numb to other people's pain or my own, or just be so rigid. Like I think I told you guys before, I operated in the masculine energy so much, and I didn't want to be like that anymore. Like, I was like, in order for me to heal, I want to heal in my feminine energy. This is what I want it to look like. And I forgave my mom. I forgave my dad. You know, I forgave myself and just started thriving. Because I feel like I went through all the stages. I went through the stage of the victim because it happened to me. I wasn't, you know, asked to be a part of that. It just happened. And then I became a survivor because I was like, so because of this happened, now all I know to do is survive. And then after that, I was like, well, this is not living. So now I'm a thriving warrior. And that's what I say. I'm a thriving warrior. And I teach women to be that, because this is not just my story. I know it's the story of other women, but that's what I do. And I proudly, in the beginning, I felt like, oh my God, I can't say that. Oh my God, I can't believe that. But I proudly say that I'm the Harriet Tubman of sexual abuse, because I know how I got from that place to this place. And I'm coming back to get you. Now, if you don't want to come, it's okay, because you're not at the place of healing. But I'm going to come back again. And when I come back again, if you're ready to go, let's go. But if you're not, okay, I'm going to come back again, but you may end up being here and I can't save you. You got to want to save yourself and you got to want to get out, but I can show you how to get out. And so in the beginning, I did not accept that about myself, but I know that that's the reason for all of this.
Talk about the birth of the book and becoming an author.
No More When Being a Victim of Sexual Abuse is No Longer an Option. So I had told myself when I was like 20 something years old, I need to write a book. And I was telling my friends, I need to write a book. I said, one day I'm going to write a book. Well, it didn't happen until like 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it and I was like, well, this is the time to write it. Because was that? Oh, yeah. Because that's when my mom and I had the conversation. So she and I were talking. And so she just said, hey, I know you got to talk to me about something. I was like, what? I was driving. She says, I know you want to say something to me. And she was like, come on, let's just talk about it. And without her saying what it was, I knew that's what she was talking about. And I remember just be like, oh my God. Like, I felt like I was just like regurgitated. Like, what? And it was just coming out. And she sat there with her elegant self. And she said, I'm so sorry. And I was just like, like that's all I needed. Whoa. Like, I had my mom back again. I don't know. So that helped the book because I said, I'm ready. And then this is the other reason, the other thing I knew I was ready. I said, now when you write this book, you're not writing to make anybody embarrassed, feel ashamed, whatever. And what I told myself, and I still say this to this day, I didn't write to expose my family.
Right.
I wrote this book so I could heal.
Yes.
And so when I said that, I was just like, are you going to be okay with people knowing you were sleeping with everybody, doing this with that? I was like, yep.
All of it.
All of that. I'm like, that's page 4, paragraph 3. You know, like, that's how I felt. I was like, hey, let's do it. When people read something like this, I feel like they need a journal. They need this. They need that. And so then I wrote an interactive journal for the book. And it looks like this. I brought it so you can see this too. So this is the journal.
Mm-hmm. Really nice.
And so that's the journal that goes along with the book.
Thank you.
And I think it's amazing for it to be together. Like when people buy it together, it's just the best thing. And then I said, when the pandemic hit, I was just like, well, you don't want to be a loser. You know, you want to reinvent yourself. Like, what do you want to do? And so I was like, I wrote another book. And I was just like, so excited that I have 3 books on Amazon. And so I did a workbook. This is the workbook. This is the workbook. No more excuses.
No more excuses.
And so I said, and what it is, it's like, it's a book. I mean, all of them are good, not just because I wrote it, but it just really talks about, I have everything in here from self-care to nutrition, to grounding, to hurt people, to counsel, like every single thing you can think of when you start boundaries. But the questions are questions that will definitely make you think. People that have purchased the book and like worked themselves through it, they said, I hate you. I'm like, what? I could not get past question whatever. Like I said, I'm pushing it to the side. I'm not dealing with that question. And I said, that's exactly what I needed. I needed you to understand that's the reason why you're not at the place of where you need to be or where you want to be in your healing, because that question has made you pause. And so I just tell people, get it if you want to go to counseling, get it if you're not going to counseling, get it if you're ready to just start working some things in yourself. And so I'm an emotional healing coach. I work with women that have dealt with sexual abuse and domestic violence, and I help them feel safe and sexy in their bodies and in their emotions. So because I try to normalize emotional healing, like we can't do that. That's what we need to do. We need to normalize emotional healing. So I'm doing that as well. So different ways that people like to work with me. Like I have a group coaching program. There's one-on-ones with me. I have a self-paced program for those who just want to start and do it themselves. Things that we're very proud of. Like this is going to be our second retreat from April 7th through the 10th. We're having a retreat for ladies that have dealt with sexual abuse or have experienced sexual abuse as a child or as an adult. Oh, wow. And when they come, they attend for free. So all they have to do is show up, because we want to love on them. We want to nurture them. They're going to get education. They're going to be fed well, like all the things that you need to on your healing journey. Because some of these women may be at the beginning, haven't started at all, middle, end, whatever. It doesn't matter. We all need it. And then the other thing that I'm just so very proud of is that we started a nonprofit And it's called I Choose Her. And so what that's going to look like is that when women are in the community, they're going to be able to come to the location and receive their services for free. And because I talk about a holistic approach, because that's how I educate my clients, holistic approach may be the best thing for you. It may not be, but I try to educate them to let them know that it doesn't have to be like therapy medication. Right. So when you come and receive the services, we're going to have therapy, group therapy, psychiatry, nutrition, yoga, Reiki, music, all of that, because we all heal differently. And when they come, they're going to get those services for free as well. So we're going to be partnering with people in our community. We've already had people like, well, we just can't wait for you guys to get your, you know, the official from the IRS. We're waiting on that. We haven't gotten that yet because it's brand new. We just started this in December, but that's what we're going to do. We're going to be impacting the world. Because that is my assignment. God did tell me that that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to help these women heal locally, and then it's going to be internationally. And so that's what we're doing. And then if you want to follow me on my website, it's www.lynnmeyer.com. But throughout social media, I am the HRT coach. I didn't even talk about that. I am the HRT coach on all platforms. So that's Instagram, TikTok. Oh, no. And then on Facebook, I'm Lynn Meyer. And what the HRT stands for is healing, restoration, and transformation. Because when a trauma happens to you, or when something like this happens to you, you don't think you can heal, restore, or transform from your experience.
Thank you for sharing with us your story, your life, taking us into that space.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Like, this was good to my soul. And even when we had spoken before, I felt really good about it. I felt safe. And I felt that you would be very protective of the story and of the information. So, yeah, I'm glad we did this. And thank you so much for listening.
Stay tuned for another episode of Beyond the Scars.